Previously on Chopper's Brexit podcast.
That referendum result stands. It's unassailable. We've had an election. Yes, Conservatives didn't do as well as we wanted to do, but we still are the largest party. We got the largest share of votes.
Theresa May is a dedicated, hard-working Prime Minister, and I believe she's got the support of the Conservative Party behind her to do it.
She can get through the crisis as a sort of figurehead of government, but it doesn't feel to me as though she's getting through the crisis as a real Prime Minister with the authority of a Prime Minister.
Hello, I'm Christopher Hope, Chief Political Correspondent on The Telegraph, and welcome to Chopper's Brexit podcast. We're recording this in the Red Lion Pub in Whitehall in the heart of Westminster, a stone's throw from my office in the House of Parliament. This was the week that Britain's formal negotiations to leave the EU finally got underway. It was also supposed to be the week that a strong and stable Theresa May launched her government's bold legislative plans for the next parliamentary year after securing the mandate that she won for Brexit. But things haven't quite turned out like that, have they? First, we have this.
We will leave the EU, but it must be done in a way that works for Britain, by negotiating mutually beneficial transitional arrangements to avoid unnecessary disruption and dangerous cliff edges.
Then this.
Today, we are launching the negotiations on the orderly withdrawal of UK from the EU.
Then this.
We will do all that we can to assure that we deliver a deal that works in the best interests of all citizens.
Then this.
My government's priority is to secure the best possible deal as the country leaves the European Union.
Yes, following her disastrous election campaign, the Prime Minister's had to shred the Tory party manifesto. And fans of so-called soft Brexit, step forward Philip Hammond, are going public with their demands for a very different kind of a deal to that championed by ardent Brexiteers. Meanwhile, the EU seems to have won the first round of negotiations after David Davis appeared to concede that a deal on EU migrants, how much Britain needs to cough up before we leave, and the Irish border need to be talked about before any possible trade deal even gets discussed. Not that he's admitting he's conceded anything of the sort. To discuss where we go from here, I'm joined by a man who until 2 weeks ago was a Brexit minister, a former cabinet minister who just announced that he wants to be leader of his own party, the Telegraph's Europe editor, and a think tank director on how this could all impact the nation's finances and Theresa May's future. Just a reminder that this podcast is now available to download on iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate and review us, or listen on the Telegraph's website. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Brexit Broadcast, or email me, chopper@telegraph.co.uk. And another reminder that we are offering podcast listeners an exclusive 60-day free trial of Telegraph Premium, our new subscription service. Simply go to telegraph.co.uk/chopper today to start your trial and enjoy unlimited access to premium articles online on our app and on Apple News. So, first off, I'm joined by former Brexit Minister David Jones, recently sacked by Theresa May, and Sir Vince Cable, who wants to be the next Lib Dem leader.
Just to you two first, David, how did you react when Theresa May said that you'd no longer be having that job?
Well, it wasn't one of the best moments of my life, but I think that any politician who takes on a job understands that from the moment that you're appointed, you're that much closer to being asked to leave. So, yeah. Whilst I enjoyed it, you accept these things philosophically.
It must be, what did she say to you, Mrs. May, when, was it,
Well, it was...
Your face doesn't fit anymore?
No,
you
no, no,
she
oh, no, no,
you?
No,
I mean,
no,
pretty
no.
harsh.
She was far nicer than that. I mean, essentially, she made the usual point that Prime Ministers do in these circumstances, that from time to time is necessary to refresh the government, and that means that some people have to be asked to leave. So that's what she said.
It's odd looking into it, because we're just going into this huge negotiation. You spent a year building contacts with your opposite numbers. You've probably got mobile phone numbers in your phone. You know some of the key principles intimately. And now you're out the door. I mean, it seems like an odd way to behave, to chuck away all this expertise.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to criticise or second-guess the Prime Minister's decision, but I think you make a very important point. These negotiations are going to be difficult, and I think that personal knowledge of the people we're negotiating with, the personal relationships that one builds up over the months is very important. And you're right, I've got a lot of interesting people's numbers in my iPhone.
And do you think the clear out at the Brexit Department, such as it is, Another minister also left. Do you think that might have damaged our negotiation?
Well, I think we have to understand that, you know, it's not just ministers. There's a very strong official team at DEXU. In fact, the best I've seen anywhere. They will be giving huge support to David Davis, who, of course, in his own right, is a very formidable opponent for Michel Barnier.
Just final on Theresa May. Do you think it's a problem that she didn't back leave at the last referendum? I know in the debate during the election, she was asked by Jeremy Paxman, do you believe in Brexit? And she said, I'm delivering what I was asked to by the people. She didn't say she believes it. And I wonder, a lot of listeners and readers of the Telegraph might believe that without someone who believes in Brexit, we can't get the best deal for Britain.
Well, I don't think belief in Brexit is an article of faith. I think that what is important is acceptance that this is what the British people have voted for. And I think that, frankly, politicians of every stamp have now got a duty to do their best to deliver it from the Prime Minister down. I'm sure she'll do her very best.
And will she be Prime Minister in March 1919 when we leave?
Frankly, where will any of us be in March 1919? I'm not going to second guess that.
And that's what I do to Vince Cable. Vince, well done on your re-election to Parliament. It's good, great to see you back. Can you win? Can you be Liberal leader?
I think I can, and I wouldn't have put myself forward unless I thought I had a very good chance of doing so and had a lot to offer in terms of experience, energy and enthusiasm at a time when the country is desperately in need of some leadership, and my party has got a role to fill.
Well, you look youthful and full of vigour.
I think that's true.
Do you have too much experience? Are you too old for the job? Is that unfair to say?
No, I don't buy that at all. It would be invidious for me to draw parallels with some of the great figures of history, but
have a go. Gladstone,
yes, he won an election and became Prime Minister at 82, which is way beyond me. And of course, Churchill also beat the Labour Party and was a Prime Minister for 4 years. And amongst our nearer contemporaries, of course, you've got people in the United States and elsewhere who are well above my age. Even Mr. Corbyn, I think, is my generation. They're slightly younger. So age is not what you are; it's what you feel.
And it's it's the march of older people running, holding the country together with.
Need a mixture. You need a blend. A blend.
But we flirted with youth, with Nick Clegg and David Cameron. Possibly we're up a generation.
Like to stereotype. It could be used against me, and I wouldn't stereotype against them either. They had an important role in their time.
I can see you're not wearing sock garters, which is what Ming Campbell had to deny when he was leader.
No, I'm not. No.
But you have got 12 MPs. If you become leader, let's throw forward and let's see if you do. With your 12 MPs, and given how hard it is to do a deal with the DUP for the Conservatives, and given your experience working in coalition and working being a cabinet minister, why don't you say to Theresa May, look, if I'm leader, I can help you form a government?
No, I'm not doing that. I mean, we've come into Parliament very specifically committing ourselves not to having a coalition with the Conservatives or Labour.
But we're
constructive, you know, and we want to be constructive opposition. I mean, our experience of dealing with the Conservatives, even very nice ones like David, is that you're mating with a praying mantis, you know. It may not be a great experience, and you get eaten at the end of it until we change the voting system.
David, are you a praying mantis, David?
I have to say I have no intention of mating with Vince Cable, whether it's a praying mantis or otherwise.
I'm stumped by what to say now. Exactly. But you say you wouldn't even. We're not saying coalition. We're saying the idea would.
No,
be
we're not. We're not looking at
we
will be constructive opposition, and you know, we are looking to work with other people. I mean, on this whole Brexit issue, the point is that the tribal divisions between the parties have broken down. I mean, the Labour Party has got a wide range of views on Brexit, so has the Tory Party. You should have heard Penn Clarke speaking really quite brilliantly in Parliament yesterday. I mean, very much at odds with John Redwood, who was two foot behind him and was shaking his head bitterly the whole time. And I think we've just got to work with and link up with like-minded people across the spectrum, trying to get a softer, more sensible version of Brexit.
Are you talking to Tories at the moment? They're around, I reckon, six Remainers, who are the European Reform Group, where there's this big group of Eurosceptic Tories.
Well, I do know attempts are being made to construct. Well, they're operating on two levels, and there is an attempt to create formal cross-party discussion on
with
Brexit.
Tory MPs.
At government level, and I think that's very sensible.
Yep.
But I think informally, all kind of networks are now being established, and I've been sounded out by several of them. And I think the aim is to... there is potentially an upside in all this, because instead of all this very narrow tribal way that we normally do politics in Britain, this will encourage people working together, you know, and I look forward to that.
When you say sound out by them, you mean by Conservative MPs who remain supporting?
Yes, and I think there are lots of Conservative MPs who may not have, you know, put up a flag called Remain, but are very, very worried about the more extreme options now on the table, who would like to keep either the customs union or the single market or both, or want a very, very softened version of what's now being proposed. And I think we should reach out to them and talk to them.
It won't take much, though, because their majority, the Tory majority with the DUP support, will be 13. You need 7 to move across, don't you, to get...
Well, I think the voting is one aspect of it. But I think what's very odd about this whole parliamentary session is we're talking about a whole swathe of bills which actually relate to very uncertain outcome, because if it's as seems likely, and as Philip Hammond among others seems to be indicating, they want a very long-term period for negotiating the economic side of it, the customs union, indeed, and we don't know what will be at the end of it. So how on earth can you legislate in the meantime on that detail? So I think whether they have a six-vote majority or a six-vote deficit is probably not the central issue at the moment.
Are you worried by this, David Jones? Now you're a backbencher again. Well, Vince is talking to some of your colleagues on your benches about undermining Brexit, you might argue.
I mean, you're right about the parliamentary arithmetic. It's interesting. I mean, there may be all sorts of alliances the other way. For example, there are a number of Labour leavers who I would imagine will want to remain leavers. Kate Hoey, Kelvin Hopkins, and you know the names of the rest. Mm-hmm. So the arithmetic is challenging, but I believe it's deliverable. But I'm, you know, concerned about this constant reference, which, you know, again, Vince just made to softened Brexit. Brexit is very clear. Brexit means leaving the European Union, which means leaving the institutions of the European Union, which must necessarily mean leaving the single market. It must necessarily mean leaving the customs union, and, of course, importantly, no longer being subject to the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. Mm. And there's another element, too, that we have to consider, and that's this. You know, the Rubicon is crossed. We've served the notice under Article 50, and come what may, unless all 28 member states agree, we will be leaving the European Union on the 30th of March. So, you know, everybody has a duty in the national interest to ensure that the necessary legislation is put in place to make sure that we get out as smoothly as possible.
Is that right? So you're working against national interest, Vince?
No, absolutely not. And I just worry that at this stage, I mean, even David was a very reasonable person. You know, we're arguing about basic issues of facts. I mean, it simply isn't true that you have to leave the single market in order to leave the European Union. Countries like Norway are members of the single market, but not in the European Union. You don't have to leave the customs union. Turkey, of all countries, has a customs union arrangement with Europe. So there is much more flexibility at the margin. And I think the national interest lies in, obviously, we want the negotiations to succeed around money, and we certainly want very early and clear decisions on the rights of overseas nationals and British nationals in Europe. But the issues around economic policy and trading relationship, it's important that we continue to fight to get sensible, soft, moderate options.
Yeah. Do you agree, David?
Well, it's true that, for example, Norway has an arrangement, but of course that means that they have to continue to allow freedom of movement, which I would have thought that anybody who participated in the referendum campaign would understand is not on the table. Turkey, yes, is part of the customs union, but of course is precluded from striking its own free trade agreements outside the customs union. Yeah. One of the things that we want to do, and the reason that Theresa May set up the Department for International Trade, is to strike those free trade agreements with countries around the world. And I actually think that that's what most people want. We don't want to be trapped in some sort of halfway house which tethers us to the European Union without the benefits of full membership.
Are you still tied to this Tim Farron idea of a second referendum, or are you going to junk that when you start running?
No, we're not junking it, but I think the time wasn't right during the general election, because people thought that we were wanting to rerun the last referendum, which we weren't, but that's how it came across, and it wasn't seen as an attractive option. But in 2 years' time, if, as David's right, that we have at that point actually left or on the verge of leaving, it seems entirely reasonable that we should put to the British public the question, do you accept what has now been negotiated on your behalf?
Parliament get that vote, don't they? So Parliament's been offered that vote already. Who are...
Indeed. Well, I personally would rather this whole thing been dealt in with Parliament from the beginning. I'm not a great fan of referendums on complex issues, but that was the way the process was launched. So if it is going to be ultimately validated, then I think one would have to go back to the public.
David Jones, you're huffing and puffing.
Well, I am, because I have to say, I find it impossible to see the benefit of a second referendum at the end of whatever negotiating process we go through. And the fact is that on the 30th of March of 2019, we will automatically be leaving the European Union. So what would the referendum achieve? I mean, that would be...
It would confuse matters.
Well, it would be actually irrelevant, because the fact is that we would, as a matter of process of law, leave the European Union. So any further referendum would be completely meaningless.
Except that the European Union has already made it very clear this week that the whole issue about Article 50 can be reopened should we wish to do it. I mean, that option has to be there. I mean, I'm not saying that's necessary we will finish up, but we have to keep open the option, because if we finish up at the end of it with the option of a terrible deal or no deal at all, which involves crashing out, which half the cabinet are warning about, then we have to keep open the option of reopening.
Isn't it important that more than 80% of the country, Labour and Tory supporters, voted for leaving the single market and the customs union? And
you put your finger on a very big issue, because you know we're talking about the Tory government, but actually the real problem area here is that it's the Labour Party. And Jeremy Corbyn attracted a lot of young people to voting for him, most of whom thought that they were against Brexit, you know, and this is the younger generation feeling betrayed and all the rest of it. They didn't know where he was and what he'd been promising, and I'm afraid, you know, the Labour Party are up for a rude awakening if they continue to press on with this, we must leave the single market and the customs union. That's not what a lot of the people voted for them expect.
It's frustrating that you didn't hoover up more votes at the election.
Well, we didn't, but, you know, whoever takes on the party will have an opportunity to win those back.
Yeah, David?
Well, I'd agree with Vince about the confusion in the Labour message, but, you know, let's get back to the basic simple facts. The country voted to leave the European Union. One must assume that the electorate understood what that meant when they cast that vote. And then, of course, as you rightly say, we've just had a general election where over 80% of the votes were cast in favour of parties who want to leave the European Union. So how many more referenda, how many more general elections do we have to have? The fact is, I think that the die has been cast. We will be leaving the European Union, and the important thing is to do so on the best possible terms.
So in terms of the terms, it strikes me that the issue about hard and soft Brexit is really about how long is the transition period now. I think Vince might disagree with this, but it seems plain that we're leaving the customs union and the single market. How many years do you think it will be, having been in government of Ireland until 2 weeks ago?
Well, that's entirely a matter for negotiation, obviously.
What do you think?
I would have thought a couple of years would be sufficient, if, of course, and this is a very important if, one can persuade the European Union to agree to that. But you know, there is no guarantee that they'll agree to that, and therefore, you know, the government has got a duty to ensure that they have put preparations in place for leaving the European Union without a transitional arrangement. And I know that DEXU is actually working on that actively.
That is an absolute catastrophe. And you know, what's happened this week is that the people who represent the real world of business, the manufacturers, the motor car industry, engineering employers, the people who represent the city, are saying to the government, and they're clearly understood by people like Philip Hammond, that crashing out would be just an unmitigated disaster and will precipitate some very serious economic consequences.
It's 2 years crashing out. I mean, 2 years, it seems like a long time to me.
Well, as David's just rightly said, even the European Union would have to agree to that. I think Philip Hammond talked about 5 years.
Yes.
I mean, the mere fact that these absolutely fundamental questions are still up in the air is deeply alarming.
Mm. So listen, you guys seem quite reasonable chaps. I mean, your friends outside of here. Don't you think we need to have a Brexit commission, a national unity group to try and get the best deal? So bring together and get get some agreement across all parties?
Well, we've just elected a parliament, and for goodness sake, you know, those of us who've been elected, you know, we're in the middle of a big mess here, and we've got to sort it out. The public are not going to thank us for going back to them again.
No.
As David said, we've had some kind of commission, a royal commission
on Brexit.
Well, why a royal commission? Why not just get the parliamentarians to work together and talk to government?
Rare moment of harmony here. I agree entirely with Vince. We've actually already got a Brexit commission that's called Parliament. Mm. Parliament is going to be sovereign in this country. Let's see it working its way towards that sovereignty by working our way through the legislation that we need. Parliament has now got a hugely important role, even more than usual when you've got a minority government, and therefore all parliamentarians have got a duty to ensure that we get the best possible deal.
And just finally, David Jones, will Britain have left the EU by 2025?
Yes.
Vince Cable?
I think it's still open to doubt as to whether we will.
Vince Cable, David Jones, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Coming up on Chopper's